Welcome to this week's episode of CT Real Estate Radio on 94.9 News Now and Stimulating Talk. I am Chaz Cook, joined by Rob Wallace of the One Team at William Ravis Real Estate. And as always, Brian Skelly, the mortgage guru from William Ravis, is here with us this week. Still missing Byron. He's got a lot going on down in Naples, Florida. I heard he was moving a couple weeks ago, so Who knows what he's getting into this Saturday.
Oh, does he need a real estate agent?
Does he need a real estate agent? We might know somebody here. But happy Easter weekend, gentlemen. The last weekend in March. Can you believe it?
Yeah. Already.
Already. I feel like January.
Got five weekends in March to do check out the open houses.
Yeah. January was like a slow, dragged out month. February and March just flew by.
It did.
I mean, it always helps when you have like St. Patty's Day.
With that much closer day, to early to warmer Easter. Weather. I'm excited.
That much closer to warmer weather. Also, that much closer to the best time of year to list your house, which we're going to be talking about a little bit later. But first, you know, we had a big week here at William Ravis. I mean, it was the 50th anniversary of the brokerage William Ravis. Wednesday, the governor declared to be William Ravis Day. So now Bill Ravis has a day named after him in the state of Connecticut.
I love it.
And then, oh, by the way, we just had a two-day conference that was jam-packed with information. What did you guys? What were some of your big takeaways from that?
I'm still recovering.
3 days later, I'm still recovering.
A lot of good professional development. Also, one of the top five parties I've ever been to.
Oh, yeah.
Bill Ravis knows how to throw himself a birthday party. We had a great time. It was a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
About 1,500 people attended, about 1,200 agents, 300 employees, live bands, awards, Ravis the Musical.
Told
the story about how Bill started the company 50 years ago in a little one-room office over a grocery store in Fairfield.
Don't you love stories like that?
It was
like,
really cool.
It really kind of gives you an extra sense of pride to like work for a brokerage like that kind of started really in does. One room and then moved up.
Did you know they had Ravis.com came out in 1995?
1995?
1995.
Really? So like AOL disk in the computer. Like
I don't think I even went onto AOL until 96 maybe was the first time I ever went on the internet. He had Ravis.com, 1995.
Oh, wow.
And there was a picture of Ravis agents using laptops in... I think it was 1992 they were using laptops. And there's like this old picture of Bill like showing agents how to use
the laptops. Like old Apple ones with the green screens, right?
Yeah. And you missed it, but then Chris Ravis told the story when he was a kid. Bill had this computer that was like the size of a refrigerator, and it was like it was in their kitchen.
Oh my god.
And Bill's wife would take the information from the MLS or from like the commercial property records and was like typing it into this old computer. So like,
and then they had printouts and you had like the perforated edges on them and they were all pages were connected to each other.
And those days they used to have all the properties, you know, before the days of Zillow and realtor.com, it was just like a book. Like, you know, he was kind of like a pioneer in Connecticut of like taking the information from the book and putting it into a computer.
It's pretty cool. Been up on technology. I love this company.
Always evolving. Right. And I think one of the things that my big takeaway was, you go to a lot of these conferences and the people that put them on or the people that you're there to support or that are giving you the opportunity to be part of William Ravis, they're not accessible. I saw Chris Ravis and Ryan Ravis, the sons of Bill Ravis, and I saw Bill Ravis walking around probably a dozen times, and I was only there for day one.
Yeah. Right?
They were like just in the crowd, mingling with agents, introducing themselves.
Yeah, anybody could go up and talk to them. And Tom Ferry was there.
If you guys
are not real estate geeks like us, he's like,
he's the man.
He's like the John Mayer of the real estate world.
Number
one coach.
Yeah, but just to have that accessibility to like the people who founded your brokerage and to the future of your brokerage, obviously, Bill's sons, that's just an incredible opportunity. So big shout out to the entire Ravis family. Ravis Nation, as I called them. Val Votto was on a few weeks ago. It was like, Ravis Nation, who came up with that? I was like, I don't know. You asked
probably
me what I was doing
probably
today.
Bill.
That's awesome. You're like, what are you doing today? I was like, I'm going to a Ravis Nation event. She's like, all right, let's run with that. So, but we've also had some interesting news post the Ravis event, which ended on Wednesday. And this hit the airways or the interwebs, as we like to call it, Friday afternoon, right around midday. A surprising update from Jerome Powell. Brian, what do you got?
Well, this is we were talking about this before we went live on the air, and you pointed out something interesting, which we'll talk about in a second. But Powell did an NPR interview on Friday. And so these interviews are interesting, too, because a lot of the remarks that are come out after the Fed meeting are very scripted and very well prepared. And then in an interview, it's just, you know, somebody's asking him questions and he's answering the questions, which of course...
You don't think that's loaded too? You don't think he's like, you're allowed to ask me this, but not ask me that?
Well, I'm sure they know. I'm sure he's you know, pretty good idea of what he's going to say. But essentially, to summarize what happened was they said, well, what happened if inflation remains elevated? And here's the quote from Powell in the NPR interview on Friday. He said, so the question was, what happens if the data shows inflation remains elevated? And Jerome Powell, his response was, then, and I quote, then obviously our rate policy would be different. And then he went on to say, for example, we can hold rates where they are for longer.
Interesting.
And then I said, well, how did the market react to that, Chaz?
And I always suggested that, oh, by the way, yesterday was Good Friday and the market was closed.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, he just happened to drop that bombshell when the market was
I mean, talk close. About calculated comments, right?
Perhaps.
So what are your thoughts? What do you think is going to happen on Monday now when the market does have a chance to react? Do you think by then it will have kind of like,
that's a good question. Yeah. I mean, it was a really quiet like week. The mortgages started out Monday, averaging 6.96 according to Mortgage News Daily, ended at 6.91. It was like 3 days in a row where it didn't change at all, which is pretty unusual. 2 weeks ago, it was at 7.11 on an average 30-year according to Mortgage News Daily. So we'll see. I mean, it's been pretty steady for the last 6 weeks. My prediction is I don't think this is going to rock the boat too much. I mean, it's interesting that he said it, but I for me, I'm always one that's a little skeptical of some of the predictions, you know, when these industry associations come out and say, you know, this is going to happen at the end of the year. I'm like, the end of the year? I mean, that is so far away. Right. You can't really say with certainty that rates are going to go down. It's not a guarantee rates are going to go down. Mm-hmm. So, and Powell said it himself.
He said it himself. Might not. Yeah, we might have to keep rates higher longer. And the other interesting part, you know, so typically, and we talked about this last week, heading into a Fed meeting, we see the rates spike in anticipation of what's going to come out of it. We didn't really see that spike going into it. And then they came out of it. They didn't do anything. And to your point, Brian, then like rates stayed the same for 3 days in a row the following week. So,
yeah, although they did say at the meeting that they were expecting three rate cuts
second
later
half of the year.
Yeah, in the second half of the year. So, but you know, he always does say it's going to depend on the data. So I think they do expect that the data will show that inflation is going down and then they will cut the rates. That's the most likely thing. And that's what everybody's predicting. But
at least one. Give us one. Right? You know, you don't have to give us three, but we'll be happy with one. Get us down into the low sixes. Maybe you can even crack those high fives like we talk about. Yeah. But speaking of data, when we come back, we're going to be talking to you guys about the best week of the year to list your home because it is coming up on us quickly when we come back on CT Real Estate Radio on 94.9 News Now and Stimulating Talk. We are back on CT Real Estate Radio. I am Chaz Cook of the One Team at William Ravis Real Estate, joined by Rob Wallace and Brian Skelly, the mortgage guru. Before we hit the break, we were talking about Jerome Powell's sneaky little conversation on Good Friday when the markets were closed and how rates may stay higher for longer. But as we know, we don't know until the data comes out. Right?
Depending on the data.
So we're going to continue to
interviewer
keep tabs
kind of
on
pushed
that.
Him into that. He's like, well, what happens if the data shows it's not going on? Go, oh, yeah.
You know, I love that though. I love when like an interviewer like is not scared to like get in there and roll the sleeves up and like ask some of those like raw questions that like you have to be real because if you're not, it's going to come back full circle because once we know, once it's on the internet, somebody's going to be hanging on to that article just waiting for you to say the opposite and then they're going to try and like blow it up in your face. So
true indeed.
I am glad that he did ask that question and that we did get a response because now we have something to base it off of when we were told a week ago that we're still expecting three rate cuts in the second half of the year. And oh, by the way, we're through the first quarter as of tomorrow. So second half of the year is coming up very quickly. Mm-hmm. And so is the spring market though. So is the spring market. And on that note, what is the best week of 2024 to sell a home according to Realtor.com? So I've seen this in the past and it has had some fluctuation and I've also seen them break it down to the best day. Hmm. The best day I think is a little bit like too pinpointed. Like how can you say like this is the best day? Yeah. And I guess you can go back and look at historical data for how many homes came on and what they ended up selling for. But I think the best week is a better indicator of like homes listed during this time.
Makes sense. Yeah.
Oh, and you think about too, like we're going into the month of April. A lot of schools have spring break during that time, right? So you probably don't want to list on a spring break week because a lot of people aren't going to be around for it.
Yep.
They may be heading south to get warm or they may be doing a last minute ski trip. So you really want to find that pocket, right? Look at like, okay, who's got it the first week? Who's got it the second week, third week? And like, where do we align ourselves? and every town is different too. So, you know, Eastline may have a different spring break than Guilford versus Griswold.
True.
I never understood that, but like, you know, that's kind of choose your own adventure on school holidays, right? But Realtor.com has determined that the best week to list your home is April 14th through 20th. So coming up on
is that spring break week?
It actually is for a lot of schools. Yeah, that is. So that's the one I would have chosen. Well, so this is also on a national level too. We have to remember that. Like, I don't know if out west or in the Midwest if they have a spring break. We do here in New England.
Well, I think in Brantford, our spring break was in March or February. Do we have a spring break?
Well, so there used to be winter break and spring break. And then because of all the snow days, they canceled winter break and just made it like a 4-day weekend, President's Day weekend. They give you that Friday and Monday instead of giving you like the whole week off.
Right.
But there's always been a spring break. And I remember when I was in school, it was always in April at some point. But,
yeah, us too.
You can tell your mortgage lender is working hard when he doesn't know when his kids are on spring break.
Yeah, he didn't even know when Good Friday was.
I'm like, we're not going on vacation.
Or were you still recovering from the event
working.
Too?
No, I'm working. He's working. I'm back. I'm back.
Yeah. So they Realtor.com published a new report in saying April 14th to 20th is the best week of 2024 to sell a home based on its market analysis. Listing during this particular week will give sellers the best mix of housing market conditions, specifically listing prices, buyer demand, sales pace, reduced odds of price cuts, and less competition from other sellers. So that one's interesting to me because they're saying this is the best week to list. If there's any agents out there doing their due diligence and following trends in the market and studying what's going on, they're going to know this is the best week to list. So they're going to recommend listing that week. So I wonder where they get that stat from.
Well, I guess when you say less competition with sellers, does that mean that people will continue to list in May and June by getting on, you know, right at the beginning of spring and you're ahead of those folks? Is that
correct? That's what they're alluding to is, so like the spring market, March, April, May, right? Essentially is where it is. The last couple of years, we haven't really seen like that much of a slowdown, maybe a couple weeks in January, the holiday hangover, whatever. But we've essentially just rolled right into the spring market.
Usually our spring market hit early.
Right.
I remember 2 years ago, January, this year, very early.
Yep. Yeah. This year was before February 1st.
Yeah, people like to get the mulch out and kind of clean up the patio and all that stuff.
That's got a lot to do with it because you're starting to see all the annuals now be in the, like the farmers markets and the garden centers.
I got daffodils in my garden right now.
Our daffodils are popping. They haven't bloomed yet, but they're popping.
Yep.
So little sidebar here, like we're going to go off on a tangent. Daffodils are an amazing flower because our neighbor has daffodils on the side of their house and we've got them in the front of her house. Hers were up 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. Ours will be up this weekend. But there is no like... Right,
and they bloom like over and over again.
Actually, lilies, mine are lilies, I think.
Okay,
and those are perennials. They come up every year, right?
Here's a little daffodil trivia for you. So at
the end
of the daffodil season, what you want to do is you don't want to mow them down.
Right,
you got to leave them out because what happens is as the leaves they kind of turn brown and shrivel up. Mm-hmm. What's happening is all the nitrogen in the leaves. Is going back into the bulb again for next year.
Right.
So don't mow down
your daffodils.
They come back though.
Yeah, they're pretty resilient. They'll come back even better. I mean, if they're in the yard, you're going to mow them. But
I guess I'm just curious. Like, and our neighbor to the right, I said her daffodils were up already like 2 weeks ago. Our neighbor to the left, his are coming up. Like they came up like this week. So ours are like kind of lagging behind. But in years past, ours have come up sooner than the neighbor on the left. So
it's probably just different varieties. They have a lot of different kinds of daffodils.
All right. What kind of daffodils do you have, Skelly? Because I know
the yellow ones.
Yeah, you have a green thumb. The yellow ones. The ones that come up every year, right?
They do have white daffodils as well. I don't know the Latin name of my daffodils.
I would always get mixed up with annuals and perennials because like an annual to me means like every year. It's annual, right? But that's not actually the case. It's a perannual.
Seasonal. Yeah.
Seasonal,
you got to plant it annually.
Right, you got to plant it annually. That's what that means. And then a perannual is a bulb, not a seed. And then that will continue to come back as long as you take care of it.
Yeah.
So interesting there. But I think you're right, though. We were talking about curb appeal. Then we went off on our little daffodil tangent there. But all the annuals are out. People are out planting. They're doing those spring cleanups. The weather should be warm enough heading into next week. This past week was...
If you haven't sold a home, I think it's amazing what a crew of the right workers can do in an incredibly quick period of time. I remember when I first sold my first time I sold my house, the realtor was like, use this guy. And I called him. And because he was referred to me by my real estate agent, he seemed to be really motivated to come out and do everything that we needed to do because he knew I was getting the house ready for sale. Mm-hmm. And I had this long list of stuff that, you know, my wife gave me, like, on my honey-do list. Like, it would have taken me years. And this guy came in with like two guys and they took care of this whole list in 2 days. So I think if you're daunting and you're stressed about all the stuff you got to do to get your house ready, you just kind of consider that a moving expense. Right. You get, you know, ask a real estate professional, who should I use? Who's your guy? Get them in, get them the list, and don't wait till May or June.
That's a good point.
You know, yeah,
you'll be behind it by then. Yeah. And then you're coming into the hot season. Well, and I think the other factor to it is, well, one, I have a question for you. The next time you moved, did you do your own landscaping because you saw the bill after those guys came in and did it 2 days? Because landscaping, it's like a kitchen and landscaping are like the two most expensive upgrades to a house. And I had not figure out why.
Maybe it's just the labor. Landscaping, definitely.
It's the labor,
kitchen,
right?
You can get around certain things, but landscaping, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do most of my own landscaping because I enjoy it, but I don't do the lawn mowing though. Okay. I gave up on mowing my lawn a long time ago.
All right.
So that's my compromise.
But so where I was originally going with that was like, then when, you know, once you hit May, like think about this, if you have a family and you have kids that are, let's say, middle school and above, you have end of year concerts, you have sports banquets, you have proms, you have graduations, you know, you have Memorial Day, you have the kickoff the summer, like you're starting to get that like summer itch, that summer bug. So you're not really as focused, unless you have to be, on just casually searching for a home. So hitting them in April 14th through 20th that week, you're catching people before they've really like ramped up those summer plans, or they've just gotten so busy where they're distracted and they're just not looking as attentively as they should be.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And to answer your question more seriously, I think the point I was trying to make is the bill wasn't that bad. Because the type of work you're going to do your house when you're getting it ready for sale is very different than the type of work you're going to do if you're going to live in the house for 10 years.
Like you're not putting a patio in.
So,
right?
Yeah, I was picking stuff that would have a strong impact that was minimal cost. Like even just like painting the threshold, like that piece of wood underneath the front door, like when you walk in.
Well, there you
like
go.
I had lived there for 7 years. I'd never painted it. And I mean, that guy probably painted this thing in like 15 minutes took him to paint it, and it probably cost me $20.
Okay.
You know,
yeah.
But like it popped. I'm like, wow, this looks great. You know, and then I had a little patio that was also peeling paint. I mean, he probably painted that in 60, you know, an hour.
Yeah, power and washed it.
Yeah, I don't think
it,
he did a great job. It was probably peeling again like a year later.
But it got the house
looked great, and it didn't cost me very much money.
So while we're on this landscaping topic here, in our house, we have this love-hate relationship with a certain type of flower, and I'm interested what you guys think of it. How do you feel about hostas?
Ooh,
love the hostas.
My wife hates the hostas. I like the hostas.
That's how it is in my house. My wife hates the hostas, and I love them. She goes out in the yard every year and rips a few out, and then the next year, like three more come back. And
yeah, they spread. They're very easy to split. They grow well in the shade.
I bought my house. I have this hosta growing literally in my driveway.
All right,
in my driveway,
in the driveway,
in the crack. Just a massive hosta, so I had to remove it.
Yeah.
I love them though. They're resilient.
They're really easy to grow.
They look good.
Yeah. They look good too. Yeah, and they're good in the shade.
They get really big though.
They've got some like purple and orange ones that I've been like kind of eyeing lately because I was like thinking about like planting some in the yard. And I think because of the color, not just the traditional orange ones, I think I finally have Jill on the on my side to go for them. But it's so interesting that your wife hates them and I like, and you like them, and my wife hates them and I like.
All right, here's a question for you: roses or hydrangeas?
Oh, see, hydrangeas, and I'll tell you why. Because by changing the soil, the ingredient in the soil, you can make them change colors.
It's based on the acidity of
the soil. The acidity of the soil, that's what it was.
pH, okay. Yeah.
Farmer Skilly.
Yeah, so you can get, if you want to change the color of your hydrangeas, you can actually buy a soil acidifier, which will make it more acidic, and that'll change the color. Or you can use like a holly tone fertilizer is a type of fertilizer for acidic plants.
And then there's even certain ways where like ours, one bush will grow blue and then one will grow purple in our hydrangeas. We actually get like a dual color one.
That's cool.
Part of that's the variety. Part of it's the acidity of the soil.
Yeah, because I bought it as a purple one. And so then like after 2 years, all of a sudden one of them bloomed blue. And I was like,
yeah, see, I don't have hydrangeas, but I got these climbing roses in my back. I think they're like Joe roses or something. They're awesome. They're all different colors.
Really?
Come off these one trees.
They bloom all summer or like one and done kind of situation?
Yeah, they bloom seasonally.
Yeah.
And then they come back every year.
Yeah.
I wonder what the 94 Niners opinion is on the hostas or the hydrangeas versus the roses. I'm not really sure, but yeah. No, it's a, we have roses. They just take so long for them to get full, and we get like three a year, and they're a lot of work. But the hostas,
they are.
Plant them and forget about them. They'll keep coming back even if you don't want them to. Hydrangeas too.
If you have a strong opinion on this, check out our podcast online and make a comment. Hydrangeas of roses.
Hydrangeas of roses or hostas.
Or hostas. There you go. But
real quick, just to wrap this up, though, according to the math behind Realtor.com, now we're back on topic. Homeowner listing during April 14th to 20th that net week, this time can net an extra $34,000 on the sale of their home. So that is very enticing, especially when you're in a competitive market and you're potentially looking to get more than that, and then an extra 34,000. So interesting times, but we're going to keep notes on when we look at the data between April 14th and 20th. And we're also going to be right back on CT Real Estate Radio and 94.9 News Now and Stimulating Talk. Welcome back to Real Estate Radio and 94.9 News Now and Stimulating Talk. I am Chaz Cook, joined by Rob Wallace of the One Team at William Ravis Real Estate, your number one team in the state of Connecticut for transactions closed since 2020. We have helped more families buy, sell, and invest in real estate than any other team in the great Nutmeg State, and joined by Brian Skelly, mortgage guru. Before we went to break, we did get off on a little bit of a tangent there, talking about our gardening and landscaping preferences. And during the break, we found out that Skelly also has a little, Brian Skelly, that is, has a little YouTube channel, Skelly's Garden.
I haven't posted a video in a while, but yes, you can check me on YouTube, Skelly's Garden. I've got... You want to learn about drip irrigation and mulching and how to grow vegetables.
What do you do in the greenhouse here too, right?
Yeah. If you've never been to the One Team office in Guilford, it's in a really cool building that used to be a nursery, and we have a greenhouse.
Yep.
And I had some plants growing last year. If I can find the time this year, I've got some plants. They might do fig trees this year.
Fig trees. Yeah, you know what? You know what's going to help your garden is we're going to have to get a hold of Martin McKinney over at Service Station Equipment and Irish Springs Pool Water and have him bring some of that Irish Springs pool water down.
Oh, the plants would love it.
To water the plants.
Before the chlorine.
Before the chlorine. Yeah, just the pure water from the secret tap. That's what we want. Martin, if you're listening, we just want the secret water to show up in the truck, water the garden once a week, and then you can head on out. But I tell you, those guys over at Service Station Equipment, I was on the road this morning at 7:15, and I passed two of their trucks on the highway, already out and on the job. There was somebody called the Tank Whisperer? Not the Tank Man, but he was like the Whisperer. It said right down the side of his truck. I was like, oh man, you got to be somebody if you got your name on the side of your truck. It's like the Top Gun, right? Maverick down the side.
Yep.
This guy had the Whisperer down the side of his, so he must That's have been awesome. Somebody important, but... They are the hardest working boys and girls in the residential tanking industry. And if you need to reach out to them for any questions regarding your residential oil tank, you can call them at 1-800-801-TANK. And as we continue to head into spring and you're starting to get that spring fever and you're thinking about that, open up that pool, don't forget to call Irish Springs Pool Water. And now we've got the One Team Weekly Rewind. I hope I have enough oxygen because it was a heck of a week, even though we were celebrating the 50th anniversary of William Ravis, the mortgage. We also had 7 new listings, 8 under contract, and 7 closings.
Wow.
Our first new listing is 70 Ventura Drive in Colchester, Connecticut. This hit the market for $499,900. 3 bedrooms, 2.5 baths, just under 2,400 square feet. I mean, it says this house was built in 1998. When I first looked at the picture, I thought it was new construction. So absolutely beautiful home. With the 3 bedrooms, 2.5 baths, 2-car garage, you've got a pool. So if you do end up purchasing 70 Ventura Drive, we've already got you covered with the Irish Springs Pool Water. They will come and get that opened up for you as soon as you close. And oh, by the way, you've also got 1.85 acres of beautifully landscaped level lot. Splash into spring, summer. Poolside in this quiet and private cul-de-sac setting. Nicely maintained front porch, colonial, with sunny and gracious floor plan. Outside living is maximized with expansive and newer rear deck overlooking an in-ground gunite pool and yard. Gas line is ready for your grill, pool, and equipment. We're fully refurbished within the past 2 years, so this is an absolutely stunning property brought to the market by Mary Pula. And if you would like to schedule a private showing of 70 Ventura Drive in Colchester on the market for $499,900, you can reach out to mary.pula at ravis.com. Next up, we've got 1-5 Town Street in Lyme, Connecticut. Before we get too far into this one, I just want to say Lyme, favorite town on the shoreline. Old Lyme and Lyme, love them. Lyme, Hamburg area, Eli's Ferry, Hamburg Cove, absolutely stunning.
Great spot.
But we've got 1-5 Town Street in Lyme, Connecticut on the market for $685,000. And this is presented by none other than Mr. Rob Wallace. Tell us about it.
Thank you, sir. Great opportunity. So you have a big old barn that's semi-attached. that the last owner had a bunch of businesses. Used to be a flooring business, used to be an art gallery, an antique shop, and attached is a 3-bed, 1-bath house. Together, just over 7,500 square feet. You're sitting on almost 5 acres.
Wow.
Great opportunity. Both, I think you do need special financing if you did want to qualify for, you know, residential purchase. But it will pass with the commercial purchase, so it is listed as
right,
both.
Right, so I see that. It is listed as a commercial property, and it was a farm, Rattleberry Farm, right?
Rattleberry Farm, yeah.
Okay, and what did they? What was the farm known for?
I'm not 100% sure on that.
So probably events, because they do go on to mention it's got endless possibilities for a country restaurant, a wedding venue, a conference center.
So much opportunity. Yeah, the space is huge.
Yeah.
But yeah, great opportunity here. The cool part is there's a famous artist there, and I loved his. I met him. He's an awesome guy. I excuse me if I can't pronounce the name. Trump Oil, I believe. So he actually hand painted a lot of the walls in the house, which is pretty cool.
Wow.
And even the floors. And I had a chance to see his artwork, and he had these cool dog faces on like older bodies. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah?
Like old, like
almost like that poker game, but he said he kind of like took him into like military photos.
Yeah. It's so cool. He had a lot of great paintings other than that, but great location, close to the ferry, the Hadleigh Chester Ferry, shoot right on over to town, close to the Opera House, Gillette Castle.
So you've got 5,000 square feet of commercial space, and then that colonial that you mentioned is 2,000 square feet.
Yep.
So
yeah, beautiful grounds.
Yeah, you can utilize 5,000 square feet to make some income, and then you can live in the other 2,000 square feet of the colonial style house there. So,
Rob,
if somebody wants to get a private showing of 1-5 Town Street in Lyme for $685,000, how can they reach you?
You can call me, text me, 860-861-0466, or you can email me, rob.wallace@oneteamct.com.
You are definitely going to want to check out this gorgeous property. I'm looking at the aerial views right now. Those 5 acres are stunning. And like as Rob mentioned, you're right out in the Hadleigh area, so right on the border of Haddam, East Haddam, Lyme. So you're kind of close. You can get to go down 82, jump on Route 11. You can come down 156 and then jump on 95. So yeah, you're not too far from everything. All right, next up, we've got a couple of boat slips. We've got 379 Whitfield Street, number BN2638, that hit the market for $30,000. And we've also got 379 Whitfield Street, number BN234, hit the market for $2,000. So if you are looking for a place at the Guilford Yacht Club to dock your boat, you can reach out to Rod Cross, rod@oneteamct.com, and he will take you down there. He's also a member, right? So he's not just a customer, he's also a client. Or not just the owner, he's also the client, right? Was that the Hair Club for Men guy?
Hair Club for Men guy.
Reach out to Rod Cross for that one, and he will show you both of those boat slips. Again, one is listed for $30,000, one is listed for $20,000, and they are in the Guilford Yacht Club.
Nice.
Next up, 496 Whitney Ave, number 4C, hit the market in, this is in New Haven, Connecticut, hit the market for $325,000, 2 bedrooms, 1 bath, just over 1,000 square feet, built in 1920. This was brought to us by Michelle Chadwick. It is in the Whitney Walk area in the heart of East Rock. Charming 2-bedroom, 1-bath apartment offers a perfect blend of style, comfort, and convenience. You're going to have an opportunity to check this one out in the open houses, but otherwise you can reach out to michelle.chadwick@oneteamct.com for your private showing of 496 Whitney Ave, number 4C in New Haven. All right, next up, 239 Trumbull Ave in Bridgeport hit the market for $429,000. 4 bedrooms, 3 baths, just under 1,900 square feet, built in 1952. I love this house because the doorway, they framed it out in stone, and then the rest of it's vinyl sided, so it gives it like that classic colonial look.
Oh, I love that.
It's actually a cape style, but to me, it kind of presents like a colonial, and this was brought to us by Karen. So great job, Karen, on this one. 239 Trumbull Ave in Bridgeport, Connecticut, on the market for $429,000. 4 bedrooms, 3 baths, just under 1,900 square feet. So you can reach out to Karen at oneteamct.com to schedule your private showing. And last up, 68 Norton Ave in Guilford, Connecticut, hit the market for $550,000. 2 bedrooms, 2 baths, just under 1,200 square feet, overlooking the marsh that backs up to the residences at 66 High Street. This completely redone ranch sits on just over a third of an acre and is at the end of a cul-de-sac. It is absolutely stunning. And wait until you see the master bath in here. That right there is enough to sell the home for me. I haven't even stepped inside, but that master bath is absolutely stunning. All right. under contracts, eight of those bad boys. We had under contracts in Waterford, Madison, Hamden, Waterbury, Guilford, Middletown, and East Haven. Closings, seven of those bad boys. Congratulations to our buyers, sellers, and investors. We had closings in Uncasville, Middletown, New Haven, Newington, Guilford, West Haven, and Norwich. All right, we got a bunch of open houses going on today because obviously we're going to hope that everyone gets to enjoy tomorrow, Easter Sunday. Even if you don't celebrate, take the day to spend some time with some family. It's a great opportunity just to relax and rewind. But if you're in the market today for an open house, you can head over to 68 Norton Ave in Guilford. That started at 11 a.m. is going to 1 p.m. 70 Ventura Drive in Colchester starts right when the show wraps at 12 and goes till 2. 496 Whitney Ave, 4C in New Haven starts right when the show wraps at 12 and goes until 2. And 24 4th Street in Meriden, Connecticut from 12 to 3. And that's going to be all the open houses all crammed in today, all those new listings we just talked about. And that's also going to do it for us on this week's One Team Weekly Rewind. And we will be right back for the final segment on CT Real Estate Radio on 94.9 News Now and Stimulating Talk. We are back for the final segment here on Real Estate Radio on 94.9 News Now and Stimulating Talk. I am Chaz Cook, joined by Rob Wallace of the One Team at William Ravis Real Estate and Brian Skelly, Mortgage Guru. Man, that last segment, that rewind, we had so much going on. That took the entire clip. And almost then some, I felt like they had to put me on like 1.5 times speed just so I could get all the information out there. So now I'm going to be a little clever here, and I'm going to pass the buck over to Brian Skelly to get his opinion on the income needed to afford a home based off of data that comes from February 2024. Obviously, this is a lagging indicator. We can't do it in real time because we need to see what happens when the month closes and kind of where things progressed, similar to what Jerome Powell snuck in on Good Friday about, you know, rates and inflation going up and down. Obviously, we didn't get the report on Friday because the markets were closed. Mm-hmm. But this article from Redfin says the typical household earns roughly $30,000 less than needed to afford the median priced home. But that's an improvement from last year. So, Skelly, we know the median priced single family home in the state of Connecticut is approximately mm-hmm. $400,000. What income would a young couple potentially need? Let's say they're doing, you know, conventional 5% down. We'll just like kind of make it like simple there. What would they be looking at as what type of income they would need? Also, you know, and throw in there like the debt to income kind of portion of it, because I know that plays a huge factor.
The short answer is it depends. The longer answer is I was actually meaning to pitch this idea to you. One of the things we do to make sure all of our agents are on the top of their game is I do a monthly mortgage training. And we're always trying to say, well, what should we talk about this month? So this is an idea I had. Well, my daughter's getting ready for the talent show, fourth grade talent show, and she's doing these drawings on a big, like 3 foot tall. Remember the old like win, lose, or draw TV show?
Right. Yeah,
with the big easel with the thing.
And he had the marker and he was scribbling.
So I'm thinking about going old school at our next training and getting a big easel, like a big, huge thing instead of the PowerPoint.
Right.
And doing like live sample pre-qualifications.
Let's do
right? So, and I guess we're going to do a test run right now on the radio. This was not planned. But that's all right. Some of the best things are not planned. So how much income does somebody need to afford a home? So, and I say this all the time to everybody, but so the amount of home that you can qualify for is based on your monthly income and your monthly payments. So lenders basically say that they want your total payments for your house, plus your loan, your, you know, your car loan, your student loan, your credit cards. We don't worry about utility bills, the streaming subscriptions, your cell phone, your car insurance. We don't care about any of that. It's not, well, not that we don't care, but it's just not part of the calculation.
Okay.
So it's about what are the payments on the real estate you own? What are the payments on your credit report for loans and credit cards? And what's the payment on the house? And the payment on the house is going to include the mortgage, the taxes, and the insurance. Mm-hmm. You with me so far?
So far.
All right. So the maximum payment allowed does vary a little bit from one program to the next. But your standard conventional loan is 50% is the rule. So we're going to make the math.
Yep. So let's say you make $10,000 a month. Your mortgage payment and all of your bills needs to be less than $5,000.
Exactly.
Okay.
So if you make $72,000 a year, that's $6,000 a month.
Yep.
50% of that is $3,000.
Got it.
So somebody who has a big car payment is going to get approved for a significantly less home than somebody that has a small car payment mm-hmm. or somebody that has no car payment.
Well, I had to buy a car like about a year, almost a year and a half ago. And what are we talking about big payments here? Because I was shocked at like what the interest rates were and what cars were going for in December of 22 when I had to buy a new car.
Yeah, cars have gotten a lot more expensive. Yeah. So, I mean, I guess it's all relative. I mean, right. what's expensive to one person so might
like,
be
let's
not
say like
expensive
$500 is like an average car payment right around now.
Well, let me put it to you this way. So, yeah, $500 is probably a pretty common car payment I see pretty regularly. I mean, I do also see $700 car payments all the time, and I see $300 car payments.
Yeah.
Depends how old the car is, how much you put down. But, you know, we've said, you know, on a $100,000 loan at 7% on a mortgage, it's about $666 a month. So that means if you have a car payment that's $666 a month, that's basically $100,000 equivalent of mortgage. So you that's basically reducing your maximum mortgage by $100,000.
So you could go from being able to afford a $400,000 house to a $300,000 house just based off of your car payment.
Exactly.
That's a huge swing.
It's, wow. Yeah, a lot of people don't realize what a big difference it is.
Yeah, that is a massive swing. I mean, $100,000 swing in buying power.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, a couple things we can learn from that. One is if you're thinking about buying a home and a car, try and buy the home first.
Right.
Don't buy a car when you're right in the middle of buying a home because that'll mess up your mortgage.
That's rule number one. Yeah. No purchases over $1,000 if you're trying to buy a home. Right.
Yes. But also what a lot of folks don't realize is we can also have you pay off that car loan to get approved for more. And a lot of people don't realize that there's low down payment options. So let's say we run the numbers and we say, okay, you only qualify for 300. And somebody's like, well, I really want to buy a house for 375.
Right.
Well, a lot of times what I'll say to folks is, well, what we can do, you know, it looks like you have, you know, $15,000 left on your car loan. You know, you were going to do 10% down. So you have $30,000 that you're going to put towards a down payment. What would you think about if instead of doing 10% down, we do 5% down, we lower your down payment from 30 down to 15. Now we have this extra $15,000 we could use to pay off your car loan.
Beautiful.
And most people will be like, oh yeah, most people are open to that. So, and that's one of the downsides to some of these online mortgage calculators or even the online pre-approvals, and you just plug in your numbers and it tells you you're pre-approved for this much. That's really the value added of a high quality mortgage person is to say, to look at the numbers, ask you like, well, what do you want? Like, what are you trying to do? And then for us to kind of crunch the numbers and say, well, what do you think about this? And what do you think about this? And see what works for folks.
I think that's a great point because so many people just get caught. They put the blinders on. They're like, we're gonna save to buy a house. So all they're thinking about is every extra dollar, every extra, you know, whatever they come up with, bonus, tax return, boom, boom, boom. It's down for that down payment.
Right.
And everything else just comes back burning. Okay, I need exactly this much to pay my bills. I'm not going to pay any extra. I'm just putting everything towards this down payment on a house. When in reality, they should be maybe splitting that or kind of dividing it up a little differently to be able to do exactly what you just said and like pay off. Boom. I mean, you knock off $15,000 in debt.
Pay off some cars. Yeah, that's really a huge swing.
And I would go one step further and say, keep your money in the bank account until you talk to the mortgage person.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, that's another mistake. I see some people thinking that, oh, I'm getting ready to buy a house. I got to pay off this credit card first. I got to pay off this credit card. Once you send that money into the credit card company, you can't get it back.
Yeah, it's gone.
You know, so, you know, sometimes people call me and they're like, oh, I just spent $10,000 paying off this credit card. I'm like, well, if I had known, I would have said, well, that's not really the best use of that $10,000. Maybe it's better to use it to pay this off or put it, or, you know, maybe they don't have the 3% down because they used it to pay off the credit card. And now we have a new problem that they don't have the 3% down. So
point.
If you have the, and even when we do, like when I do pre-approval for somebody and they're paying off the car loan, I'll tell them like, you know, don't pay this off right now. Just keep your money in the bank account. Yeah. And paying off this car loan will be one of the last things we have you do.
Okay.
We could even pay off the car loan at closing. And it's actually less paperwork required when you do it that way. Because like for one house, you might need to pay off the car loan. And for another lower priced home, you might not.
Okay.
So even if you get your offer accepted, you don't know. Maybe you do the home inspections and needs a new roof or a new septic and you end up not buying that house. So sometimes people are really eager to get to work on doing what they need to do, which I appreciate that they have a sense of urgency and that they want to do the work. But again, once you send that money in to pay the car loan off, you can't get it back. You know, keep the money in the bank. And then, you know, we can have the way it works is I just check a little box off in the computer and says, okay, you know, this person's willing to pay this car loan off if we need to do that to approve the loan. And then, you know, we get the inspections done, we get the contract signed, we get the appraisal done, get everything else done. And then we'll pay that off as like one of the last things we do.
I like that.
That's a good
plan.
Point. Yeah. I did that when I bought my house.
I
paid off everything.
Yeah, and talk to the lender first, and then I say, hey, at closing, we're going to pay off this, this, this. So just have that set aside and we'll make it happen. And it worked.
Yeah. I mean, even like sometimes at the last minute, like the home insurance comes in less than we thought it was going to be. And then I'll be like, oh, we don't have to pay off the credit card. So, you know, sometimes the numbers improve as you're going through the process. So, you know, and it's people love it. Like, hey, remember we talked about you paying off the credit card? Good news. You don't have to if you don't want to, you know.
But, oh, by the way, you probably still should because it's at a variable interest rate of 19% right now. So FYI.
You never know.
You don't I still would probably recommend it.
Maybe they got to pay the mover. They might need the money for something else. You never know. But if the money's in your bank account, you got a lot of options of what you can do with the money is the moral of the story.
I agree with that.
So let's get back to our example here. So, all right. So $400,000 house. So again, so it's going to depend on how much other debt you have and how much the property taxes are and how much you're doing down. But it's really all about the monthly payment. So if you can lower the monthly payment on the mortgage, then you can get approved for a higher price. And if you can lower your other debt, you can get approved for a higher price.
Okay, I just want to say I'm disappointed because we were at a little intimate talk with Tom Ferry, the number one real estate coach in the world. And he was showing us the evolution of the MLS. And we started with the MLS books and these printouts.
I know where he's going.
And then all of a sudden he pops this calculator up and it looks like it's from 1988. And like that used to be like how mortgage calculators were done. And I looked over my shoulder and I said, Skelly, you still have one of those? And he's like, yeah, I do.
Hey, it works great.
Where
it works
is it?
Great.
You busted out your phone
HP 12C. Well, I actually paid to have the phone.
So he's got the HP 12C calculator app on his phone. That's so I've seen it all.
It's great. You know, it's good to know how to do the math. You don't want to always rely on the computer. If you can do the math, you're one step ahead of the game. So where were we here? We're doing a little example. How much time we got left?
We got
1 minute. All right, yeah. we're gonna fast track this. All right, so let's say you said let's do a $10,000 a month income.
Yeah, $400,000 house, $6K in taxes.
That's actually not too far off from the median income in Connecticut's about $110,000 in New Haven County. So $10,000 a month, 50% of that's $5,000. Let's say you've got a car loan for $700. Let's say you got a student loan for $400. And let's say you got a credit card for $100. That basically leaves you with about $3,800 for the house. You're going to subtract whatever the taxes are. That's why you got to call your mortgage broker, tell them how much your taxes are, because that's going to affect the numbers. Let's say taxes are $600. Let's say the insurance is $150. Insurance has been going up lately. Leaves you with about $3,000 left for your mortgage, not including the taxes and insurance. So assuming you're doing 20% down, we're doing this on the fly here.
Love it.
Let's do 7%. Basically, in that scenario, you could get a mortgage for about $460, assuming that you have that car payment and a student loan. So that's how the math works.
That's not bad.
Yeah, and you get rid of that car payment. It goes from like $460 to, you know, maybe $550 or something like that. That's the loan amount. So you could do maybe a price of maybe $700,000, something like that, if you got a 20% down.
I like it.
Pay off the car.
I like it. Thank you for the math. And thank you, Cooper. Thank you, Service Station Equipment. Thank you, Martin. Thank you, 94.9. Thank you, Rob Wallace. Have a very happy Easter, everyone out there. And we will catch you guys next week on the fresh new episode of CT Real Estate Radio on 94.9 News Now and Stimulus.